2. Oh, he's knocked it over the boundary. And Australia are home. Ice in his veins, Pat Cummins has led his team to a famous victory here at Edgbaston.
That roar, Tails, that sound, that is the sound of the greatest, one of the greatest at least, moments in Australian cricket history, in Ashes history. Well, if you didn't stay up overnight, you would have known the news by now. Australia win by 2 wickets at Edgbaston. And what a game. We witnessed cricketing history there, Tails.
This is one of the biggest moments in Ashes history. Watching the reaction to what everyone's talking about, watching the love for Pat Cummins and what is it? The love for Cumball? Is that what it is now?
Cumball. It's the newest ball in Test cricket.
I'm comfortable with it. Very comfortable with it. But watching, yeah, it's amazing to see the reaction. You and I both at different times throughout the whole test. We were talking about will we win, will we won't, and all the scenarios that could have happened. I don't think either of us saw it playing out like this. No way.
Oh, absolutely. If Australia were going to win, it was going to have to be one of the batsmen making, you know, a big ton or a big 80. And obviously Khwaja made that 60, but then got out, left a lot for the tail to do. And, you know, Green and Head and Carey didn't really chip in too much. So just an incredible victory with Captain Cummins just leading the way. And Nathan Lyon, the difference between the tail in the first and second innings was absolutely amazing. And, just a new piece of Edgbaston history. Some payback, redemption from 2005 Ashes and from Headingley possibly. It's just nice to get on the end, a winning side of a close one. We just haven't done it in a long time. So one of the most epic victories Australia have ever had.
Pat, in all the test match wins you've been a part of, where does that one rank? Is it number one?
Number one, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Start of Ashes series, number one.
Well, to have so much to unpack from the game, you know, you could spend 2 hours on each day, let alone trying to sort of wrap up the 5 days. What I did find...
And so we shall, ladies and gentlemen, for the next 10 hours.
Welcome. What I did find was how stressful it is watching cricket over in England. You know, you don't necessarily watch the full game every day. You go to bed at lunch or at tea and you're hoping, fingers crossed, then you wake up and you've got to try and digest everything that's happened. And then you're mulling over it for a full day. You don't get any sleep. And then it all happens again. And it can change in the blink of an eye, especially with this baseball English team. But Taz, I wanted to start off on tactics and I guess approaches. There's been a lot of conversation about baseball. People enjoy the name so much. They get used all the time. But I guess, you know, the Australian, the Cumball tactics as well. There's a big difference in that. And I just wanted to get your thoughts, I guess, on how the game was played. And we don't want to take too many takeaways from the first test, you know, overreading things. But what was your thoughts on the tactics used by both teams? And I guess in particular, England and how Australia responded.
Yeah, and this probably sounds a bit boring to those people that aren't test cricket natives. But this was such a fascinating chess match because the tactics were so different. And you're right, the tactics imbue as well the attitudes of both coaches. Like, it's called baseball. It's not called English Revolutionary or Lion Ball or something like that by English Lions. It's baseball. It's about the coach and it's about the attitude of the way they play. It's this freewheeling, ultra-attacking style. You're there to score runs as fast as possible. You're there to take wickets as fast as possible. Whereas ours is a bit like, I mean, we were kind of like Bruce Lee, you know, be water. That's essentially, there's a famous like concept in NFL where teams that don't have great defenses have bend but don't break defenses, in the sense that they let teams keep, you know, marching down the field right to the end, but they don't let them over the last little hump. And that's what we did the entire test. They never blew us away. And that was probably goal number one for Australia, is they could never blow us away. That was the point of baseball. It's just absolutely dominate early and blow the other team away. And that was probably our key crucial tactical victory, was that we didn't get blown away. And that meant that we had an opportunity to pull off an amazing win. Do you think that both sides look at this test? Because England were on top for 99% of the test. You know, you can never ask the fatal question in cricket, who's winning? But we always talk about who's in the lead and who's on top. England were on top for 99% of the test. Do you think that they would be happier with how they, with their tactics, or do you think we would be happier with our tactics? Because I think their tactics work for 99% of the test.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it was as you say, an intriguing battle. And England mostly would start the day really hot, get out into a lead, and then Australia would sort of crawl their way back for the remainder of the day really slowly and sort of just get back to just almost even, and then it would happen again. I think, as you said, Australia on the first, they sort of wanted to play their own tactics, not get drawn into the baseball, but also figuring it out as well. And I think, you know, Pat Cummins made some changes in the second innings with his field. So I think that they executed their tactics against England a little bit better in the second dig, in the field, certainly. My only concern, and as you say, baseball does work, but I felt like the Australians had a few more gears to go through in the game. So you could see Australia, when conditions suited, they were really attacking and really aggressive. And when England were on top, they said, hey, hang on, we're just going to defend for a while. We're not going to get blown away. Hang in there and then wait till to strike when the iron's hot. Whereas England, I guess the only criticism on them, and maybe it's all what baseball is about, Tails, but they just went 100% all the time. And there were times in the game where perhaps if they just slowed down just for half an hour, for 20 minutes, at the, you know, until a new batsman came in, they could have really ground Australia into the ground. An example is Joe Root in that second innings, was completely on top of the Australian bowling, had a lead chipping away, 40, didn't look troubled, and then came down the wicket to Nathan Lyon and got stumped and threw his wicket away. Now, I know that's what baseball is all about, no fear, and maybe you can't have it, you've got to be 100% or not at all, but to me, that felt like a time when England could have afforded to just take the foot off the accelerator a little bit, because they were in a position of real dominance and had the chance to grind Australia down, and that's what kept Australia in the game, and that's what Australia were counting on.
Do you think then there's going to be a change of approach to, from England and from baseball? Do you think they're going to be, because it felt like their mistakes allowed us to win it, right? There was the mistake to declare on day one, like read that however you will, but whether that was arrogance or not, it felt the way Joe Root got out, again, that felt a bit arrogant. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing. Their attitude to the Australian batsmen when they got them out, all that sort of stuff. It felt like their mistakes kept us in it. Do you think they're going to change the way they play, or do you think they are just going to back themselves to be like, you know what, those are mistakes we wouldn't ordinarily make, we'll just run it back?
I don't think they're going to change, and I genuinely think it'll be to their detriment, because I'm not saying change baseball DNA, I'm not saying that at all, but if you just recognise the few moments in a game where you could just play differently, as I said, for 10 minutes, half an hour, then I think that would be their advantage. Whereas I think Australia have got tactics they didn't execute 100%, but I think they'll continue to work on how to execute those tactics throughout the tournament. And now they've got a 1-0 lead, I think really puts Australia in the box seat.
Absolutely, Vanders. And you mentioned it just there, the 1-0 lead. If we take the step back and look at the bigger picture, I think rain permitting, which is always a massive factor in England, you're probably going to get a result in every single test, I think, on the basis of this. The game was just too fast. Like, we played relatively slowly and there was still enough time in the game for a result. So you're probably going to get a result every time. In the past, I kind of felt like if you'd burgled a first test win, like you pulled one out, you might have even only needed to win one more to draw the series and therefore retain the Ashes. Do you think one test, do you think it's as that much of an advantage as it has been in the past, particularly because you're probably going to get a result every time?
Well, you and I were looking through some recent series in England and realised that the first test of the Ashes in England is different in Australia. It was normally in Australia, if you go up 1-0, it can be quite decisive. But in England, who's won the Ashes hasn't necessarily depended on who's won the first test over the last sort of 20 years. However, this is a really short series. It's sort of over 6 weeks only. So you just wonder maybe if it is more significant. I think time will tell. But I do feel like, and just sort of to go back to generalizations here, I think that Australia played within themselves a lot more. You didn't get runs from Smith, Labuschagne, Warner, Green didn't do that much. They didn't bowl amazingly. They bowled pretty well, but not amazingly. So I think Australia have a different level to go to. But I think England, you know, this could egg on my face exactly when they win the series 4-1, but I just feel like, you know, Root, big century, some decent runs from the other players. I don't know how many more levels they've got to go at. They can bring in Wood for some pace, but I just wonder if Australia will just build into this series nicely, and a 1-0 lead over a short series is really going to help them with the confidence to do that.
Well, theoretically as well, like, and I know it was a docile pitch, that was their three best quicks. Like, nobody's really talking about it. Anderson, not that effective. Really didn't give much. Robinson had his moments, absolutely. And Broad, again, still had his moments. But we've gone and outscored them with, you know, essentially their best bowling lineup they could muster. The exception being Moeen Ali. Is it a big mistake? Was it a big mistake to play him or not? Because I thought he bowled well.
Well, Taz, you just brought up two huge questions, and we're going to get into the specifics in a moment, especially discussing Moeen Ali and his injury as well as the pitch right after a few messages from our sponsors.
And as I tell you what, I actually knew somebody that was in Birmingham on day 5 of the test. And you know what else? You won't believe this. He did not go. You know why he didn't go? It was raining. It was raining the first session. He had the ticket to one of Australian sports' greatest moments for the last 20 years, and he did not go because it was raining. And you know why he couldn't go out in the rain?
Just too wet raincoat. Oh,
raincoat with a K. He didn't have one. Can you believe it? You've gone all the way around the world to England. You didn't take a raincoat with a K. No,
that is idiotic. And obviously, raincoat deliver everywhere, globally, worldwide. You could have got an importer, could have taken the kids. They've got raincoats for kids as well. So that's raincoat with a K. Make sure you don't miss the greatest test in Australian history. Just get a raincoat. Tails, we've discussed some sort of overarching themes, Bazball, Cumball, what we thought of the game. Obviously, that's going to expand throughout the series as we discuss it a little bit more and you have a chuckle over Cumball. It's very serious. But there are sort of some burning topics.
It gets us out of a few sticky situations, doesn't it?
Absolutely. There's a few burning questions, though, topics that we've got to discuss as we move sort of into the next test at Lord's. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but there are some things that came out of that test that, we just need to discuss and to see what impact they'll have on the series. You mentioned it before the break. I wanted to start with Moeen Ali. Was it a mistake to select him?
No. I'm going to say no, and the reason I'm going to say no, he actually bowled quite well.
He did bowl
well. And to your point, if you genuinely didn't think you had somebody else that could have played, I understand that Bazball involved being a little bit arrogant and being cavalier. I don't think Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum are so naive and so arrogant that they thought, you know what, we'll just pluck a guy out of retirement and bugger it. I think they played him because they genuinely thought he was their best option, took 3 wickets, bowled okay. I mean, ultimately, the proof was in the pudding when Joe Root was bowling towards the end of the Australian innings and Cummins whacked him. So,
absolutely, and I agree with you. He did have some ripper balls. Some of his bowling was perfect, turned it more than Nathan Lyon. I guess, was he mismanaged by Stokes by having to bowl so many overs? He's got a soft fit. Like,
bowling was always early too.
It was always going to happen. It wasn't like they were, you know, it's not sacrificing him for the future on day 5 and on an Indian deck where you're just trying to get something going. It was in the first innings, finger injury. Like, it was always going to happen. You talk to the spinners and things like that who haven't, they say, yeah, look, what are they doing? It was always going to happen. So was it forced from the Australians or do you think it was mismanaged by Stokes?
I think it was mismanaged. I think he brought him into the game so early and kept backing him as a way to essentially say, hey, man, you're our guy. Which meant that he was bowling with that newer ball, which was the hardest thing sort of thing. So he kept having to bowl,
And it had an impact in the fourth innings. Their star spinner wasn't able to. And Joe Root, you know, very, very good bowler. Probably underrated, if anything. Did a good job, but in the end, probably missing Moeen Ali. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next test with that. Do they just go with a route or do they play Moeen or do they have to go somewhere else? Next on our list, Tails, is before we get into the pitch, just want to talk about big cum dog, Patrick Cumdog. Mm. Not Jason, not Jason Cummings from the Socceroo, though there was talk of maybe putting them together.
Great reference from you.
Having the cum balls together, but no, Patrick Cummins. Is this the finest moment in his career?
It absolutely is. And He's such an interesting figure in Australian sport at the moment because he is the ultimate representation of player power. So he got rid of a coach. Let's not dance around it. He got rid of a coach. Yeah, it was a senior group, it was longest time, whatever. He got rid of him. He's got all these negative perceptions around him. And for him to actually go and have a positive, heroic moment hasn't probably hasn't had too many great bowling moments, with the exception, I think he took a five for during the Ashes when it was here. But he's essentially got all these negative connotations from the wider public because he's the ultimate player empowerment captain. And then to have this moment where he gets his side home with the bat, and he's been batting terribly for 4 years. It's more than just winning the test and a captain getting you home. It felt like putting a bit of the shine back on the Pat Cummins legend, for want of a better term. It felt like seeing a almost a friend or someone that you know had struggled for so long, and for them to have this great personal moment. It just felt much bigger than a cricketer or a captain seeing his side home. Like if Steve Smith had batted us home, you know, 10 years ago, whenever he was captain, sure. But this was somebody doing it against the odds in an incredibly tough moment, in a situation we haven't done it a lot, with all these negative perceptions of him. I just think it's such a different moment, I think. And it adds an extra layer and an extra richness to winning this test.
Yeah, absolutely. There's certainly a lot of symbolism in it. I don't know if I go as far as you to say sort of, you know, the trouble is, you know, the perception of him is too negative, but...
Hey, you don't read Seven Cricket's social media comments, mate. Like, no. I'm not joking. Like, it is terrible. The go woke, yeah, go right. broke. People do not like that comment.
Woke boy. Everyone's bloody, let's not talk about wokeness and the BS. That's the BS about people calling him woke. That is, he's a bloody champion of a bloke. But the you know, Ashes captain, there's always a lot of speculation, and he was getting it served to him pretty hard day one and two. So to not change, not fold, and just be quietly confident, which he obviously was really impressive. So certainly one of the greatest moments in his career, but also in Australian Test history. Tails, I also wanted to touch on the pitch. Now, you and I have disagreed on what pitch is best for baseball over the last week or so, but I still maintain to this moment, and the more I think about it, the more solidly I defend my comments, is I think the flatter the deck, the worse baseball works. I think if you're getting 350 in baseball on a flat deck versus if you're getting 250 on a green deck, the 250 is much more valuable. And I just think with England's bowling attack, having a flat deck like what we saw at Edgbaston is just not going to work for them. You've got old people in Anderson, you don't have a spinner now. I just don't understand it. And I think they'd be much better on a green seaming deck, as far as the runs are just worth more weight in gold.
I understand where you come from. I disagree for the reason we spoke about earlier in the pod, is that it's easy.
That's why we've got such a healthy podcast.
Because to your point about not overanalyzing things, well, you didn't have a spinner on the fifth day and they nearly won the test. I would be very interested to know if that was the exact same pitch had we batted first. If we'd have batted first and we were the ones trying to set the running, trying to work out whether or not to declare or how far in front things are, and baseball came home with a wet sail on day five on a flat pitch, yeah, we'd probably be validating that and saying, you know what, yeah, you just have to hope to get them on a pitch that has a lot of assistance. So reserving judgment there for me. I think there's too many factors that went into it.
Well, I'm going all in on it. Stake my reputation on it, but we shall see what they serve up at Lord's. Tails, it feels far too soon because there's so much to unpack to move on to discussions of impact teams and what's going to necessarily happen in the Lord's test. But as I said, we don't have 10 hours.
Yeah, let's do it anyway.
You have to subscribe for the extended podcast to get that sort of content. So implications for next week. One I want to start you on is Johnny Bairstow copped a fair bit of criticism behind the stumps, and probably fair enough, especially when you compared him to Carey with his keeping. Firstly, is his spot in danger? And if it's not, do you still bring another keeper in like Folks? It would be Folks.
Absolutely not. No, spot's not in danger. That's 78. They got it. That 70-80 got, if we remember, was at a kind of a tricky time. I think they were 5 for 180, 5 for 170 when he came and got that 70. No danger whatsoever. He'd have to go for another 3 or 4 tests, I think, before Ben Folks was reconsidered.
Do you think so? On that, not dropping Bairstow over Folks, great, understand that. Do you think it's worth bringing Folks in then and playing Bairstow as a batsman and dropping someone like a Crawley, for example?
I mean, I would like to drop Crawley because he just strikes me as a massive knobhead, but
sure.
No, okay. I'm not.
Well, that may come into consideration.
I think that side for one of like is pretty balanced. Like, I just don't see how you could. I don't see how Ben Folks could be a better bat than any of them. You're essentially asking to replace one of the top three and having somebody from 4, 5, 6 go and bat in the top three. And I just don't think there's anyone capable of doing that. So, no, I don't think they change their top seven until they absolutely have to.
Interesting. I tend to go the other way. I think you should bring Folks back in. I don't think they will, but I think they should. And I think they should move Bairstow up the top of the order. It's bold, but it's bold, but so is Bazball. He hits them well.
Didn't you suggest this? I just had a recollection. The Ashes that were here, I'm pretty sure you suggested the same thing. Was it one of us definitely suggested it? Either you or I suggested
it. They didn't do it, and they lost. So that's proof, causation.
Exactly, yeah. Coming back to you, Vander, speaking of top of the order, openers, David Warner.
I think I have a bad read on this, but... Nice. What my read is I think he looked better than he has.
Sure.
And I think he looked quite dangerous. In the first innings, the shot he played was poor, and it wasn't just unlucky. He was off balance completely, chopped on, and gave a lot of momentum to England. And the issue now is when he gets out to broad, it does give England a lot of momentum. It puts a lot of pressure on 3 and 4, Labuschagne and Smith, just because it's everyone knows what's happening and the crowd gets so up and about. So I tend to think you pick for the first two tests of a series. I think he's safe. If they'd lost, I'm not sure. But I think he's safe again, especially because Khwaja's making runs. So I think he's safe, but he's got to perform in this next test, I would say. Needs a big, maybe not 100, but a big 80-plus. You, what do you think?
Again, I mean, it's the same argument. There's just no alternative. Like, what are we going to do if we don't like...
Johnny Bairstow
works. Like, there's nobody that could potentially pull a Bairstow in our current lineup. I don't think Marcus Harris is going to score a hell of a lot more runs.
Harris is the only option, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's been brought on tour to open, so he would be it.
Yeah.
You can't put Khwaja up there because he's already there.
Well, exactly right.
He's already been moved.
There's no,
you can't put Head up there.
Head is the only other option. Right? Head opened obviously in India.
Yeah,
but
I don't like that.
I do not like that at all either. So no, I don't think there's another option. There's just pure and simply there is not another option. So I think he's gonna play. And admittedly, he scored half as many runs as he did the last time he was there. So, well, it's a massive improvement, really.
Well, I guess anything's an improvement on last tour.
Vander's one final one on the Australian team. Now, pretty much we were thrown into a tizzy when Mitchell Marsh was marking out his lineup in one of the great creative moments.
Oh, he got me.
Probably his only meaningful contribution to the entire tour, but good luck with him. But the other Mitchell, the greater Mitchell, will he feature in this next test?
Just on Mitch Marsh, is it just played to my arrogance? I was like, didn't see it coming. Great call.
It was so believable, right? That was the amazing thing about
it. I love it. Changing it up. Geez, I'm just lost in my own ego there. So the bowling for Australia, I think, I mean, Bowen went from the greatest bowler that Australia's ever seen to looking almost a weak bowler in the first innings, which was really interesting because I just lost faith instantly in him, which is so unfair and unreasonable. But I do wonder, especially if it's flat, I do feel like Mitchell Starc is a great option, especially if Boland and the other bowlers are going to go at 5 anyway and over. Now, Boland's an exceptional bowler, don't get me wrong. He's not trash, but I just wonder if he's going at 5, do you bring Mitchell Starc in anyway, who has the ability, and we saw valuable lower order runs from England. And even with the top England, the top order, if they're playing Bazball in the middle order, if he can bowl as he does so well, his Yorkers and his bounces, it's likely to get a better result. And you don't think that Root's going to be trying to reverse ramp him first ball for six because he's just going to be so dangerous with those lengths. So I think the whole attack probably needs to bowl some more short stuff and some more sort of one day cricketing balls. But I mean, Stark is such a valuable option. And if everyone's going for runs, it's tempting to bring him back in. I don't think they will change the 11 tails. Obviously, the pitch is so dependent. But if it is green, let's say, then you're more likely to want to play a little nibbly bowler anyway.
Ben, as I know it feels like it, that the Ashes is the only thing in our world and it's been absolutely massive. We're so excited about it.
Nothing else matters.
Nothing else matters. I agree with you, Vanders. That's the nihilist note that we're going to end this podcast on. We'll make sure to have some footy chat in the pod next week. But is there anything at all that's just standing out to you in this past week?
No, I think just, it's a long 5-test series, a long series. So just enjoy this one, Tails. Sit back over the next week or so, the break, and enjoy the British press just ripping baseball apart. It's just going to be a beautiful thing and enjoy it.